keep a Q-tip by your workspace, right? And remember that the letters in Q-tip stand for quit taking it personally. QTIP, quit taking it personally. And so the Q-tip is a reminder. I have bags of them that when I present, I bring and give to people when we talk about communication, because like you were saying, Mark, when especially when you started, it's hard not to take it personally when somebody is telling you something, that you are made to feel deficient. And you know what? And to be real, sometimes we are deficient. Sometimes it was something we did. No matter what the reason or the cause was, typically people aren't coming to attack us personally. Parents, as you know, both of you being parents, we defend our children the best way that we know how to. And some people do it very adeptly. They communicate very well, and some people don't communicate well. And but either way, it's not a parent trying to make something bad happen to you. They're trying to create something better for their child in, nearly 100% of situations. Welcome, listeners, to this episode, this podcast takeover of Love, Sweat, and Tears from Responsive Learning. This is your host, Marty Silverman, and I am super excited today to have two friends of mine that are actually true friends of mine that I've actually met in person. I've actually gotten to hug both of these people in real life, which has been a huge, thing in my life. I was really glad to get to meet them both. Our guests today are Andrea Johnson and Mark Horner. Andrea and Mark are both administrators, elementary and secondary, one here in Texas and one in the great state of Ohio. And so I'm going to have them introduce themselves first before we get into the topic. Andrea, so glad that you were able to join me tonight in this. Why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are?
Well, I'm glad to be here. My name is Andrea Johnson. I have almost 20 years of experience in education, spanning all levels. I currently have the pleasure of leading an elementary school. I'm in the Fort Worth, area.
All right. And Mark Horner.
Well, Marty, thank you for having us on tonight. So, my name is Mark Horner, and I am in year 27 of my educational career. This is my second year as principal at Talmadge High School. And then 2 years previous to that, I was assistant principal at Talmadge High School. And then for 23 years, I was in the classroom, the majority of which were at Talmadge High School. So I've been in one school system from student teaching all the way through my principalship for 27 years. And Talmadge is a suburb of Akron, the home of LeBron James. So we're about 5 minutes away from St. B, actually, where he went to high school.
That is awesome. I'm so glad to have you both. Mark, just so you know, Andrea was high school before she was elementary. She can definitely
Okay.
understand your situation up there with the big people that are getting ready to go. And now she can also understand my situation, the one that I had with all my years in elementary with all the little people when they first come to us. And today, what we're going to talk about, though, is not kids so much, but we're going to talk about some of the struggles that administrators have with communication and culture, right? And very specifically, we're going to talk about the title of this is When Parents Push Back. And I'm going to read you just kind of like a little intro to this episode, and then we'll get to talking about it. So, from curriculum controversies to discipline disputes, parent pushback is becoming more common and more public. This episode dives into strategies administrators can use to handle tough conversations while also preserving relationships. And so, I kind of want to begin by asking you both, first of all, you both deal with parents all the time, I imagine. And it's kind of funny because when we were trained to be administrators, very little, if any, of our training had to do with it was always supposed to be student focused, teacher focused, teacher focused, right? And very little of it was working with parents and community. And so a lot of us have to learn that on the job, and we do, right? You go into your office expecting everything to be, beautiful and hunky dory and rainbows and sunshine, as I always say. And then somebody tells you have a parent waiting for you, right? And of course, we have that as teachers as well, but it's different when you are the teacher talking to a parent and you have a specific relationship with a child on a daily basis, as opposed to being kind of called in as a a tertiary person in that relationship. So I want you to think kind of using your administrative lens right now. And I just want you to kind of go around, between the two of you, and I want you to tell me about a specific parent interaction you can think of. And I want to start with actually one that is positive. I want you to tell me about something that you had, because again, I'm going to go back to sunshine and rainbows here, and talk about a situation you had dealing with a parent that actually was a positive. And I know even when we get to talking about negative, hopefully they turned around and became positive, but I want you to specifically think about what's one of the best interactions you had with a parent. So who wants to go first?
But and I'll pass it over to Andrea here in a minute. When I was thinking about some of the questions that you were asking, narrowing in on one specific example was kind of hard because I think you probably remember when you were, a principal in the building, and Andrea, like it seems like every single day it is either on the phone or we have a, somebody drop in unexpectedly. And so, trying to think of a specific example, is sometimes hard to do. I do have a situation where I had seen a parent out in public, and I introduced myself to them because they were with their student, and I just went up to the student and I said, "Hey, how are you? Is this your parent?" And then I try to make it a habit every time I see a parent out in public to thank them for allowing their student to be at our school and me to be their principal. And so I thanked them and I said, "Yeah, your son is awesome. I try to know as much about all the kids as I possibly can so that I can have some connection point with a parent or guardian." And in this case, I had seen him play in a soccer game. So I thanked him. I said, "Hey, your son played really well last night. You should be really proud of him. I certainly am." And then a week later, the parent ended up coming back into the building and had to pick him up, and I reintroduced myself again, and he was just like, "I want you to know, hey, thank you for what you said about my son the other day. It just meant it came at a good time, and we needed to hear that." And it's things like that where you're, just constantly trying to plant those seeds of positivity with parents and grandparents and guardians and as much as possible, because sometimes, as you know, that conversation has to go a different direction. And you want to kind of lay that foundation early.
Absolutely. And just piggybacking off of that, of like the laying the foundation, that space of trust, I'll say one of the experiences, it started off kind of rocky at first, but turned into a really positive one was, and it's great that we're talking about pushback too, because within this example, there was some. But I had a student last year, and it was obvious that he needed additional assistance. The placement wasn't proper for him, but he was a kindergarten student, so it was his first year in school, that kind of thing. So we kind of gave it some time, and the mother was at first in total opposition, and just believe that no, we just give him more time and more time. But it was a disservice to him as well as the other students in the class. So I think one of the things that was a happy moment was when I finally could convince the mom that we needed to give him more support. And one of the things that would happen was, he was displaying a lot of behavioral challenges. But what she would see with me is even, when she was picking him up or whatever, I'm still going to love on him and tell him, okay, buddy, we're going to try it again tomorrow. So she could see that there was a good positive space and a care for her child, not a we're just going to throw him over and give him some services. So afterwards, once we finally got in place, it was his happy spot, right? It was exactly where he needed to be. And mom came over and she pulled me to the side and she said, "You know what? I didn't agree at first, but he's found his tribe here. He's where he's supposed to be." So it was just a good connection of it, paying the trust, of laying that foundation. So when you do need to try to pivot, parents know you have their best interests in mind.
Andrea, your example reminded me of something similar that I had my first year as an assistant principal. The first expulsion hearing that we had that I was a part of The very so like the first student that I had to do all of the work to at first, obviously, you don't want to expel, but then once you get to the point where you need those wraparound services that you can't provide, and expulsion kind of gets you at the table where you can talk about an alternate placement. I was the same way. I had a lot of pushback, and it was the most difficult conversations in the world to try to explain that even though we're using that term, it's not as scary as you think, and we love your son, and we want to make sure that he is provided for, but what he needs, we can't offer. And so and it was really tough, because you're right, like I think Marty, you mentioned a moment ago, we're not trained in this. You don't take a class on how to handle expulsion hearings or have conversations with parents and to tell them, hey, your son or daughter needs to go somewhere else or whatever. But he left, and then last year he was able to come back in as a senior. And he had the best year, and he got what he needed someplace where they were able to provide the services, and it turned into such a success story. I hugged him when he walked across the stage as his principal, and he received his diploma.
That's exciting and a huge win.
Listening to you both, it just reminds me of the fact that both of you talked about having to front load with positivity. When I think about one of the things that we talked about is that parents will very often, community members will very often react to a situation, and it used to be just between the school and the parent, but very often now they'll react to a situation on social media before working it all through, right? I'm mad about something that happened today at school, and I'm going to post it on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, whatever, and then we'll worry about it later. Like we'll try to get the solution later. But in the absence of the relationship, people can fill in all kinds of potentially negative intention in what we do as school administrators. And so, Mark, when you gave the specific example of I try to meet the parents in neutral, especially better in like a neutral spot. I see them at the grocery store, I see them, somewhere, and we can kind of have a positive conversation or even a neutral conversation, but away from something that happened, right? An incident. I think that's really important. And I think that Andrea, you talked about specifically, not giving up the first time the parent was, hesitant. You didn't go right to, oh, well, she doesn't understand, she doesn't care. You'll hear people say that. I was about to say teachers say that, but it's not just teachers that say that. Teachers say it, other kids say it, sometimes administrators say it. Well, she doesn't care. She doesn't want, we put in our own heads that intention, which reminds me that it needs to be two ways. That communication needs to not just come from us to them, but also from them to us. And so, what I wanted to ask you was, what kinds of strategies, situations can you talk about where that line of communication from the parent or community to the school gets opened so that people feel like they can come to us with something rather than go right to social media?
That's a huge question, right? It kind of depends on the relationship you also have with the community. And I know in my track record, that's one of the things I really talk about and how to move schools and change schools is having everybody a part of it. They're less likely to say something when the local business down the street supports you, when the local church is also, when all of these different parties feel like they are vested in the work that the school is doing. And one of the examples I definitely say is when I took over one of the schools, my first school as a principal, it had so many negative reviews. It was almost just uncanny, all over the website. And it took a minute for us to build the trust to say, and I had to engage. So I had to go on to the sites and say, hey, ma'am or sir, how about you come to the school so that we can have a meeting? Let's talk about your concerns. Holding some town halls. But as the leader, you can't be afraid to push into that, because the only way to change it is to be open and be able to allow people to ask questions. I'm not going to say it's an overnight thing. It took a while. Even at my current school, every now and again, you will have a parent who goes out and they say something. But as the leader, you're kind of evaluating those sites so that you cannot respond necessarily in a go back and forth way, but a respond in the let me invite you into my space. Let's talk about your concerns. I want to hear them. And then before you know it, you have other community members who are on the page saying, no, not Miss Johnson, or no, not this school. And they're defending you before you could do it for yourself. But I think it's that first step of being open and unafraid to address whatever challenges may be alive in your school or your community, and being honest about that.
Yeah, and I think that's awesome, Andrea, that you're saying that, and I so deeply respect your experience going into a building that you don't know and you're not familiar with, and just radically changing the culture. That's awesome. You know, my experience is a little different, having been there for so long. And you know, and we when I first moved, well, when I first started teaching and we started a family, you know, my kids opened and enrolled here into Talmadge, and we fell in love with the school system. I loved what I was doing. I loved teaching. So I was like, let's just move to Talmadge. So I live here and I've been here. I have deep, deep roots. And so that has been for a long time what I've been able to use to my advantage to maintain an open line of communication and kind of protect what goes on and protect my staff and my students from. I mean, we still have the social media stuff, and like you, I'm sure, Andrea, like I don't even follow it. The very we have this thing called Talmadge Talk, and the first time I got put on Talmadge Talk, my first year as an administrator, and kind of, you know, it was an uproar. Everybody kept texting me, and they were sending me screenshots and all this, and I just said to everybody, I don't ever want to know. I don't want to know. I don't care. You know, I don't want it to affect, you know, who I am as a person and as the building leader. So don't even tell me. But it's like, you know, my connection to the community and both my kids having graduated and all that has aided me in kind of pushing forward the message and the vision that we have for our high school. And it has also opened me up though to a lot of opportunities to communicate, because when you are here for this long, like your number gets out there. You're, you know, I'm so visible. So sometimes I am getting bombarded with text messages or hey, somebody gave me your phone number, and so I'm actually got a I got a new phone out here for work that I'm converting things over to try to put, you know, parameters in place. But just trying to address them and answer them honestly. And I invite people in. I'm like, I want part of our directional system is to involve the community and get them into our building. So I'm constantly inviting them into any event that I possibly can, and I'm pushing that message out. Like, we want you here. We want you to know what's going on in the classroom. We want you to know that that thing that you're hearing that is going on in the public schools really isn't. You know, we want you to see the good that's being done here. But you know, it's just constantly responding and trying to promote that kind of a mindset that, hey, our schools are within reason. We don't just open the door and let people come rushing in, but you know, we want them to see, and we use social media to try to control that narrative so often.
Yes, it reminds me of, if you're not telling your story, someone else is.
Yep,
So
exactly.
that's exactly true. I want to kind of shift the conversation here just a bit, and I want you to put yourself in your situation, your daily situation. So this should not be hard. I'm not asking you to do something that you don't do on a regular basis. And that is this. You have a staff member that comes to you and says, Mr. Horner, Ms. Johnson, I have a parent that is angry about blank, upset about blank, you know, whatever. They want to have a conference with me. How do I prepare for this conference? What would you tell them to do to prepare for that interaction with the parent?
A great question. I think for myself, I usually take into account the experience of the teacher. One thing I found early on is, again, no one is training on how to have these parent conferences. And especially with a lot of my new teachers and even some of my more experienced ones, I would listen to the complaints that the parents said, like the teacher said that my kid was special ed or my it's just some claim that they were making, and I would kind of cringe, but then I had to think, you know what? We didn't do a training on how to speak to parents. So, one thing I always really talk to teachers about when we're talking about parent conferences is one, remembering that this is someone's child, right? And thinking from the lens, even when I'm having conversations as an administrator, I always take the space to affirm and say, hey, you know, I have a teenager too. I can understand how you feel, et cetera, right? And not that being false, but it being true as a parent, how would you feel, right? And so I ask teachers to one, begin with that lens in mind. And then two, one of the biggest things is what data do you have to support whatever claims that you may be wanting to express with the parent or concerns? Back that up with data. Don't just say, oh, I feel like he's behind. Okay, well, this assessment says he's performing at X level. This is why this is my concern. So it's harder to push back on something that is sound and grounded in data. So starting there, and then not making this exhaustive list of where they're seeing deficiencies. So where can we pull out something, dig in there and pull out something that that child is doing well, even if they're you, because sometimes teachers reach this level of frustration. And so they go into the meetings and they're just frustrated because little Johnny is or isn't doing X, Y, and Z. And that can kind of overshadow the conversation. So kind of telling them to, again, ground themselves in the data, to be able to drive the conversation.
Yeah, that is such wisdom, and I love how you talk about to like look at it from the parents' view, and you know, at first, in some of those first conversations I was having way back when, I was like, you know, kind of defensive, and I was taking whatever comment was being made to me personally, until you realize, hey, this is their kid, and they are advocating for their kid, and you know, you got to meet them where they're at. And I love something that you were start, you know, the point that you brought up at the very beginning, which was, you know, it depends on where that teacher is and their experience, you know, and kind of bouncing back to that. If it's one of my newer teachers, then I'll offer to sit in with them. I'll offer to you know, kind of co-converse with them. But I always go back to what you're talking about. What is your data piece? How many times have you contacted home? Have you sent an email? Have you made a phone call? Have you been helping, you know, communicate that the student is struggling either with a behavior issue or academically, and documenting it so that we can, you know, as administrators, we can back them up. One of the things that I did, you know, that I started last year, the beginning of the school year, and you know, this is nothing that I've invented. I beg, borrow, and steal from everybody. So I don't know who to give credit for, but I just got on Canva and I printed up like a positive phone call like journal, and I just made it kind of goofy and little, and I made it a contest at the as soon as the teachers returned, I said, hey, you need to call as many of your students as you can and just tell their parents or guardians that you are excited that you're going to have them as students. And that way that their first communication is it's a positive one, you know, and then cycle back through the first 9 weeks and just identify one positive thing that they've done in the classroom, you know, score on a quiz or they picked up a piece of paper or just find something so you can make that positive connection. And then that just makes it easier. There's some of the other like kind of the positive deposits you've made. That will give you that credibility to make that have that difficult conversation. And
You know,
so that's
Mark, that made me think of something. I was actually just looking for one, although I realize people won't be able to see this, but we had printed postcards that we had a picture of our school, and it was actually just one I took on my phone one morning when the sunrise was beautiful. And I had those printed onto postcards, and we would have the staff members send home postcards that way, either right at the beginning or like throughout the time. Everybody got a stack of postcards that was equal to the number of kids that they served. And the idea was that that receiving that postcard also gave a physical reminder. They could stick that up on the refrigerator, whatever, and look at it and be able to have something to hold in their hand. Plus, everybody loves, we talked about this summer, right, Mark? Everybody loves getting mail, and you know, not just bills. And so the phone calls, but I want to add that to it as well, is that that's an idea that you can use as well, is to have some postcards printed and use those to send out as well.
Great tangible reminder, like you talked about.
So I want to kind of close up a little bit by talking about some specific techniques, some ideas, some strategies that help de-escalate situations, right? And I'm going to begin, and I'm going to show you one because this came up. You also saw me reach over. Luckily, our listeners don't see this, but I reached over, and one of the things that I bring to when I present, and all that, is I bring this little guy here in that's in my hand. You know what this is. The two of you, this is a Q-tip that I'm showing, and what I always tell people is keep a Q-tip by your workspace, right? And remember that the letters in Q-tip stand for quit taking it personally. QTIP, quit taking it personally. And so the Q-tip is a reminder. I have bags of them that when I present, I bring and give to people when we talk about communication, because like you were saying, Mark, especially when you started, it's hard not to take it personally when somebody is telling you something, that you are made to feel deficient. And you know what? And to be real, sometimes we are deficient. Sometimes it was something we did, right? But even with all of that, no matter what the reason or the cause was, typically people aren't coming to attack us personally. Parents, as you know, both of you being parents, we defend our children the best way that we know how to. And some people do it very adeptly. They communicate very well, and some people don't communicate well. And but either way, it's not a parent trying to make something bad happen to you. They're trying to create something better for their child in nearly 100% of situations. I'm sure there's the outlier situation where that doesn't happen. And so us a tip that I would give, a strategy would be to look at your Q-tip when you get that and say, okay, I'm not going to take this personally. I'm going to address this for the best outcome for the child, for the family, and also for me. And so I want to know what some of your tips would be.
Andrea, would you like to go first or?
Either way, it's up to you.
Well, go ahead. I have a couple, but yeah, I'll let you.
Okay, I guess I'll start from a bigger, I guess, overarching view before giving really specifics. I think I always say you can't pour from an empty cup. And I think as administrators, we are often sometimes overworked, underpaid, not taking good care of ourselves. You're on the edge, you're all stressed out. So you have to remember, even though we think we're superhuman sometimes, that you're bringing your human self into whatever conflict or conversation that you're having. So even before backing into the specific conversation is really as an administrator, making sure that you're taking care of yourself, making sure that you're in a good mental and head space as you're going throughout your workday. But to nail it down to just in those conversations, really one thing is to really like you. The Q-tip was an amazing. I'm gonna definitely steal that. It was an amazing analogy of just the mindset and the lens of. Okay, I have to one control my emotions because you're right, I'm human and you're walking into my campus and you may be telling me this, this, and this went wrong. But really, and I talked about it earlier, staying grounded in the fact that you're doing what's best for the kids, right? Like that's what we're trying to get to. And parents are advocating. I mean, sometimes kids go home and tell these grandiose stories. What do you expect a parent to do, right? They've heard, he's been bullied and beat up in the bathroom. And so they come in supercharged and ready to do what all of us would do as parents is come in and advocate what's going on. So one, letting them get that space out of talking and then affirming. And Marty, you said it a second ago, is not being afraid to take ownership and apologize for the places that we were maybe deficient or could have responded in a more appropriate way. But still then how do we move forward? So I'm always trying to ask that question of, okay, this may have occurred. These are some things that we can do to stop that from happening, or or service in this area, whatever the concern may be. But allowing them to breathe, right? That space to kind of to present their concerns and just be heard. And we know sometimes we get those district office calls because they just didn't get heard, right? No one ever just listened to what they had to say, even in the venting spot. And I will say that's something as the years has passed as an administrator that I've really learned is to not take it personally and to just let them talk sometimes, and just listen, take some notes, and then think about how you're going to move forward.
Yeah, it's diffusing that conversation, and is it does take a lot of practice. And I felt like it just, you look back at every stage of your life and every leadership position you've ever held, and how that position always kind of the issues you dealt with and the controversy you dealt with and the conflict was just preparing you for the next step, where it's all just a little bit bigger and a little bit harder to deal with. And it's the same case. Like, yeah, when parents come in, one of the most important phrases, and I know this is what you're saying, but it's like, yeah, just literally looking at them and saying, hey, I hear you. I hear exactly what you're frustrated with. The other day I had a parent come in and they were upset about the way that a teacher was making them feel, their student feel in the classroom, and they were concerned about it. And I owed them an apology at that point on behalf of our teacher. Like, yeah, you're right. I apologize that your daughter felt that way. Never in a million years would I ever want a student to come out of a classroom feeling like they weren't valued, seen, or heard. And owning that, and then just saying, as the building leader, I give you my word, I'm going to address that issue with that teacher, because we don't want any student to ever feel that way. But just kind of owning it. And I love what you're talking about being in a good headspace. It was interesting when you said that earlier today. I had a conversation with an aspiring administrator, and we were talking about some of the lessons that I had learned, as an assistant principal, now building principal. And I mentioned the book by Dan Pink called When, and it's a great book where it just kind of talks about, when is it your ideal time to have those difficult conversations versus, trying to not have them. Like, in the afternoon, my patience is shot and I'm tired and I'm not the best version of myself. I do not want to schedule a parent meet. Now, we always have drop-ins every once in a while, but if I have a meeting, I'm going to schedule a parent meeting in the morning, because that's when I know I'll have the most patience and clarity of mind and the ability to kind of process what the issue is in front of me. So, and my version of the Q-tip, and I love that Q-tip as well, but I keep my why, my state. I have a why, my why statement printed up, and it's sitting on the other side of my desk. And I can't even begin to tell you how many times I look at it and throughout the day, and especially if the blood pressure goes up, and I'm like, okay, why am I here? I'm not here for me. I'm here for them. I'm here for their kid. And I need to make sure that no matter what, I'm constantly advocating for them. And so, it's just constant self-reflection, and I think all three of us would attest to the fact that throughout the day we have a lot of successes, but then there are failures too, where we drop the ball and we overpower somebody in a conversation, or we our body language isn't appropriate, and then I just journal about it and learn and try to put in safeguards to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Right. That goes with you win or you learn, right? There's no lose in these situations. You either win or you learn. I just have to tell you both. I know this conversation could go on the whole rest of the night, and people would be enriched by hearing everything you had to say. I want to close by, first of all, thanking you guys both for agreeing to be here with me and spending the time, but also sharing your insight and your wisdom with the people who are listening, who are either currently administrators, future administrators. Maybe they're not administrators at all. Maybe they are just somebody who's interested in leadership and communication. And so I want to thank you both for being here for that. And also, I want to remind our listeners that responsive learning has tons of courses on leadership and communication. And so if there's something you want to know more about, maybe you could look at the Responsive Learning Library and find something to pick up to do some PD on your own and make that happen. But before we go, if somebody wanted to get in touch with either one of you, if they had a question for either one of you, Andrea, how would they contact you?
I do not mind either text or, phone call or email. My email is Andrea, Andrea, J292 at Gmail. And then my phone number is 210-818-3425.
All right. How would people get in touch with you?
So email, my email is Horner, Horner dot Mark, Mark, at TalmageSchools.org, and it's TALLMADGE schools, SCHOOLS.org. And then you can also reach out to me on social media. I'm on Instagram, and I don't use X, mostly Instagram, because it connects to my Facebook, and I could just, post pictures about stuff going on, but it's at THS Mr. underscore Horner.
Well, again, thank you both for taking your time to be with us this evening. I'm just so glad to see both of you in almost real life, though you're both far from me right now. And I want to thank you again. And listeners, if you have any questions, get in touch with us here at Responsive Learning or contact Andrea or Mark.